KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Coming up on the Children's Hour, we're diving into the incredible journeys that animals take during migration. Our guest, Scott Weidensahl, author of World on a Wing, The Global Odyssey of Bird Migration, joins the kids' crew and shares how birds, whales, and butterflies find their way across the globe. Learn how birds use the stars and Earth's magnetic field to navigate and hear the secret nighttime sounds when birds are flying overhead in their migration, captured in a special piece from Bird Note. It's all mixed with great music to learn the science of migration. Coming up on the Children's Hour, stick with us. The Children's Hour is an independent production of the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico-based nonprofit. We're distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American radio network.
It's time for the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.
Why do migrating birds never get lost?
I don't know why.
Because they always wing it.
It's time for the Children's Hour. Kids Public Radio.
This is Teresa Anderson from Hummingbird Go.
I'm sitting on my stool, just thinking about the friends I used to know. Summers we spent outside, stopping time on our thighs, smiling at the boys walk by. Then a breeze begins to blow, and I know it's time to go inside. But wait. Oh,
That's Teresa Anderson from Hummingbird Go right here on the Children's Hour. I'm Katie Stone here with a whole lot of great people at the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and online. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
And who do we have with us today?
Hi, it's Nina.
Hello, it's Amadeus.
Hello, it's Asa.
Hi, it's Daniel.
Hi, it's Amaya.
Hi, it's Kybia.
Hi, it's Ram.
Hi, it's Max.
Hi, it's Kayan.
Hello, it's Lucas D.
Hi, it's Corbett.
Hello, it's Marcel.
Well, everyone, I'm so delighted you're here out there in listener land and here at the Outpost and on Zoom, because today we're going to be talking about something pretty cool: bird migration. Have you been noticing birds migrating recently?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I usually see some around the summer months often.
I've been seeing some of the sandhill cranes that we have around here in the last 3 or 4 months or so move through, and it's always so cool to see them and often hear them before you do.
Yeah, you can hear them up in the sky making their sound, you know, way before they actually land. But lots and lots of birds migrate. Today on the show, we're going to learn a lot more about migration with someone who actually studies, researches, and writes about migration. Our guest is Scott Wiedensahl. He's with us on the show today. We're going to learn so much. Stick with us. This is the Children's Hour. This is Jesse Balin. Follow along on our full playlist at childrenshour.org. Look for migration.
Little bird up in the sky. Little bird learning to fly. Little bird stretching your wings in the morning light. Little bird make it all right. You've got all you need to make a good fight. Little bird, stretching your wings in the morning light. Fly away, don't forget that you'll always be, always be, always be my baby blue. My baby blue.
Listening to the Children's Hour, I'm Katie Stone, and our guest today on the show is an expert in migration. He's a writer, a naturalist, and a researcher, and his name is Scott Wiedensahl. Welcome to the Children's Hour, Scott.
Well, thank you, Katie. It's a delight to be here.
What is the process of migration?
When we talk about migration with animals, we're talking about what scientists call return migration, which is where a bird or a bat or an insect starts in one place, goes somewhere else, usually because of the change in the seasons, and then comes back to its starting point.
Why do birds migrate?
The birds that migrate most are birds that depend on resources or habitats that are only available in certain times of the year. So a lot of the birds that migrate out of North America are birds that feed on insects, because there's not a lot of insects in the forests of the north in the wintertime, or birds that feed on fruit, hummingbirds that feed on nectar. There's not a lot of nectar in the northern hemisphere in the wintertime, or birds like ducks and geese and swans that need open water so that they're safe from predators. All the lakes around here are frozen, so most of the waterfowl have flown south for the winter. Now, they may not have gone all that far. They may only have flown as far south as they needed to find open water. But most birds that are migratory depend on resources that are only available at certain times of the year. Now, you can say, why travel all the way to Central or South America? If you want insects, there's insects in Louisiana in the wintertime. A lot of our migratory birds probably evolved in the tropics. We think of them as our birds that go south for this little winter vacation. They actually spend most of their life either in migration or down on the wintering grounds. They're away from us for about 7 months of the year, and they're only up here in the north for about 5 months of the year. The thing about living in the tropics, living in a rainforest, it's a really hard place to raise babies. The resident tropical birds that live year-round in Central and South America, they lose more babies and nests and eggs than they're able to successfully raise. Now, they live a longer life, so over the course of their life, they produce enough babies to keep population going. Whereas migratory birds making this long trip north, think about the advantages of coming up into the Northern Hemisphere. The days are longer. If you're one of those birds that migrates up into the Arctic, the sun never sets during the summertime. So you've got 24-hour a day light. If you eat insects, oh boy, are there a lot of insects up in the Arctic. More mosquitoes than you can imagine. And there's not a lot of competition. It's just you and your buddies that made this long, arduous migration.
Do any animals that aren't birds migrate?
Oh, lots of animals that aren't birds migrate. Fish, whales, insects, bats. The list just goes on and on. I mean, think about whales off the western coast of North America, humpback whales that go all the way up into the Bering Sea to spend the summer, and then they're down in Florida, gray whales that go down the Pacific coast and migrate down to the coast of Mexico to give birth. You have sharks that travel thousands of miles across the ocean. Here in the east where I live, most of our monarch butterflies spend the winter in the mountains of Mexico. So lots and lots of animals that aren't birds migrate.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. Today we're learning about migration. Our guest is Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. We have a lot more to learn. Stick with us.
Whales swim so far, so free, across the deep blue sea. Monarchs chase the summer sun till their journey's done. Caribou and snowy lands, marching strong, brave bands to the tunes of nature's call, wandering us all. Magical migration, dance of inspiration.
Migration of Birds by Gary Snyder. It started just now with a hummingbird hovering over the porch 2 yards away, then gone. It stopped me studying. I saw the redwood post leaning in clod ground, tangled in a bush of yellow flowers higher than my head, through which we push every time we come inside. The shadow network of the sunshine through its vines. White-crowned sparrows make tremendous singings in the trees. The rooster down the valley crows and crows. Jack Kerouac outside, behind my back, reads the Diamond Sutra in the sun. Yesterday I read Migration of Birds, the golden plover and the Arctic tern. Today that big abstraction's at our door, for Juncos and the robins all have left. Broody scrabblers pick up bits of sting. And in this hazy day of April, summer heat. Across the hill, the seabirds chase spring north along the coast, nesting in Alaska in 6 weeks.
Time to go.
That's Dana from A Place to Call Home with Migration. Reading the poem by Gary Snyder was Wally Wolodarski from For the Birds. And Magical Migration before that was Magical Tunes. You're listening to the Children's Hour on Katie Stone. We're learning about migration. You can follow along on our playlist and find links and pictures at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs supports the Children's Hour. The Arts Alive program on Museum Hill in Santa Fe is free for all ages in June and July. Plan your summer visit at museumhill.net. The Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico-based educational nonprofit that is supported by listeners just like you. You can learn how you can help make Kids Public Radio at childrenshour.org. This is the Kids with Dave Burba with Bird Migration from Songs for Teaching right here on the Children's Hour.
Some birds need to take a long vacation. They flock to someplace warm when it gets cold. Another home to find some yummy bird food. This is called migration, now you know. Think about the big gray goose in Canada. It stays up there as long as it is nice. Before the winter, he flies down to Mexico so his wings won't get as cold as ice. Some birds need to take a long vacation. They flock to someplace warm when it gets cold. Another home to find some yummy bird food. This is called migration, now you know. The hummingbird spends their summer in mountain high, but in the fall the flowers they all fade. So they find their way down to the valley below, where warm winds make their nectar once again.
Listening to the Children's Hour, and today we're learning about migration with our guest Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds.
How do you even monitor migration?
You know, electronics have gotten smaller and smaller and lighter and more powerful. And there's whole new generations of tiny, tiny little transmitters. I mean, some of them small enough not just to put on the smallest birds like hummingbirds, but actually to put on migratory insects like butterflies and bumblebees. They're called nanopins. They weigh like 1/400th of an ounce. Insanely small. There's something called the MOTUS Wildlife Tracking System, M-O-T-U-S, which uses automated receivers all across the world to track these tags. And you can go to the MOTUS website, motus.org, and all the tracking data for like 54,000 birds, bats, and insects that have been tracked with MOTUS is on there, and you can look it up and map it and see where these animals are going.
That is so cool. We've put a link at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration.
What is the furthest migrating bird?
Well, the longest nonstop migration that we know of by a land bird is bar-tailed godwit, that 8,100 miles across the Pacific Ocean. Arctic terns, these beautiful white seabirds that nest on the coast of Maine, they'll travel 61,000 miles in the course of a single migration. They're not doing that at one shot. They're feeding on fish and squid and other marine animals. They can rest on things that are floating in the water. They can learn certain stopover points, basically like their restaurant and hotel room, places where they can stop and rest that are safe and have a lot of food. And they have to hit a lot of these stopover points on a long migration.
How don't the birds get tired when they're flying?
Most of the birds that fly long distances, they're built for it. They have these really aerodynamic wings that allow them to travel very quickly and without expending a great deal of energy. Birds have these powerful muscles in their chest, pectoral muscles, that power their wings. Have you ever seen a wishbone on a chicken or a turkey? In the bird, that acts like a spring. It's called the furcula. And when the bird pushes its wings down, it presses that bone together. And it's like putting pressure on a spring. When it releases, it helps pull the wings up. So it's actually got this kind of internal spring system. That furcula helps store energy and release energy with every wing beat. Also, birds have hollow bones, so their bodies are really light. Birds don't weigh nearly as much as you think they probably do just to look at them, because they're mostly feathers. So it doesn't take as much energy to keep them aloft. They're also super efficient at burning energy. A lot of birds eat almost their weight in food every day, and they need to do that just to stay alive because they're burning so much energy. Migratory birds really only put on fat during the migratory season. If you find a migratory bird in the summertime, it's not going to have any fat at all. They put on sometimes huge amounts of fat. I keep going back to those bar-tailed godwits because they're like the most extreme bird. Before they're ready to take off and fly across the Pacific Ocean, half of their weight is fat. They feel like a water balloon when you pick them up. They jiggle when they walk. They have so much fat. By the time they land in New Zealand, they've burned up all their fat. In many cases, they've actually burned up some of their muscle tissue. They actually cannibalize their muscle tissue to get through.
That's the voice of Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. In the background, we're hearing the bar-tailed godwit, recorded in New Zealand. These are the birds that migrate over 8,000 miles all in one shot. Incredible. Learn more with us at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. This is Heather Feather from Songs for Growing.
The birds and geese know winter's coming soon. Yes, the birds and geese know winter's coming soon. Oh, there are less bugs to eat and less worms for a treat. And so the birds fly south for the winter. The birds say, fly away, we've got to fly away. It's getting cold, we can't find food, we cannot stay. We've got to fly away, fly south and fly away. You'll see us back again some warm spring day. Now winter's coming soon. Yes, those butterflies know winter's coming soon. When the flowers start to die, the nectar's gone, it's time to fly. And monarchs make their way to Mexico. And they say, fly away, we've got to fly away. Summer's day. Okay, let's be birds.
Hear the wings? Flying up, circling in the sky. Now let's fly down. Next, butterflies. Hear the little wings? Start heading south. Now we're gonna be sea turtles. That's it, we're swimming. Good job. Okay, change currents. Got it. Okay, let's continue heading south. Did you know that turtles have amazing GPS? They have their babies in coastal areas, and then they take currents far away, and they come back and have babies the same place year after year. The turtles know the season's changing soon. Yes, the turtles know the season's changing soon. On the currents in the sea, they move around so happily. And they have their babies back where they were born. Sea turtles swim away, sea turtles swim away. The turtles swim around the world, they swim all day. Sea turtles swim away, sea turtles swim away. You'll see them back again another day.
America, don't care, oh, how they look in pictures, well, maybe sparrows. The coot is vain, so's the black-capped titmouse. Creeping warblers complain, but not like the screech owl. If they'd been alive to see themselves drawn, what would they have to say about John James Audubon? Other creatures would be flattered to see themselves in books, postcards, and calendars. But birds are fickle, fancy fellows. A canary will take you to court over a shade of yellow. If they've been allowed to critique his work, would his name still be synonymous with birds? The great crowned purple finch take offense, or the least peewee flycatcher be incensed? Can't you see Bonaparte's gull there winged to his breast? We've all seen vireos and bobolinks bothered by less. Never a man to hunt birds for sport. Audubon still ate some birds of America after he finished up their portraits.
That was the Deedle Deedle Dees right here on the Children's Hour from Strange Dees Indeed with Birds of America Don't Care, Oh. We're learning about migration today on the Children's Hour with Scott Widensall. He's been a naturalist and lover of birds, following their migration, fascinated by it all of his life. You can learn a lot more about him in his book, World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds, as well as some of the latest cutting-edge research about migration. But first, Scott, I wanted to ask you, are birds migrating all the time, or is it just like sometimes?
Most migration takes place in the spring and the fall, and most migration takes place at night. Even birds that are usually active in the daytime migrate after dark. The air is cooler, it's calmer, there are fewer predators. So they'll take off just after dark and they'll fly high overhead. They make what are called nocturnal flight calls. Nocturnal means after dark. They don't sound like the songs that they sing during the breeding season. They're not beautiful, long melodies. They're these little short, almost like anti-collision warnings, because sometimes there are so many millions of birds flying in the night sky that there's a chance they could actually fly into each other if they didn't hear each other up there. A lot of nights, it's hundreds of millions of birds flying over New Mexico and the whole rest of the lower 48.
I love that. Coming up on the Children's Hour in a little bit, you're going to hear from Bird Note, and you will hear some of those incredible songs that have been recorded while birds are migrating at night. Let's go over to Amaya.
How do they know where they're going, and how do they end up there every single time?
This is one of the real amazing things about birds. Most birds come out of the egg with a genetically coded set of instructions, basically baked into their DNA, that will tell them they have to fly in a certain direction at a certain time of the year for a certain length of time. So that gives them the sense of where they need to go. But finding their way there, birds have a whole series of cues that they can use to figure out where they are and what direction they're going. They look up at the stars. Now, they're not looking at the constellations. Does anybody know what's the one star that all the old ancient mariners looked at? What's the most important one?
The North Star.
The North Star, which is Polaris, right. Have you ever seen a time-lapse photograph of the night sky? All the stars are kind of swirling around Polaris. Polaris doesn't move, but everything else does because the Earth rotates. The stars don't move. Obviously, we're the ones that are moving, but it looks like the stars are moving. The birds can see that. They can look up at the night sky and see what part of the night sky is not moving. So that tells them north, south, east, and west. Some nights it's cloudy and you can't see the night sky, but that's okay because birds have backup after backup after backup after backup. One of the things that birds can use is the Earth's magnetic field.
So the Earth has a magnetic core. How does the magnetic field of the Earth work that they can feel it on the outside of the planet?
Well, here's the crazy thing. It's not that they can feel it. They actually can see it.
What?
And this is something that we just figured out in the last 15, 20 years. Scientists have known for a long, long time that birds can sense the Earth's magnetic field, because if you tape a little magnet to their head, they lose their ability to navigate, to orient magnetically. And this is where it gets really weird. There is something called quantum entanglement. And essentially, there is a pigment in the eye of the bird. It's a protein called cryptochrome. And there's tons of this cryptochrome in the retina, in the back of the eyes of migratory birds. And as they're flying through the night sky and light from distant stars is entering their eyes, it's striking these cryptochrome pigments and it's magnetizing them. And it's allowing them to see the Earth's magnetic field, these big arcing bands of magnetic radiation that radiate out from, as Katie said, the Earth's molten iron magnetic core. It's telling the birds you're going away from the equator toward the poles, or you're going away from the poles toward the equator. So it works in both hemispheres. We don't know what it looks like. I would like to think it's like spectacular like the Northern Lights, but it may just be a smudge in the bird's eye that it can see the angle of the Earth's magnetic field. But man, I would give almost anything to be able to talk to a bird and ask, what does the Earth's magnetic field look like?
That's Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of a few different books, including The World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. We've posted links and other information at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. Coming up, we're going to hear from Bird Note with some beautiful sounds of migrating birds at night. And we've got more with our guest, Scott Wiedensahl. Stick with us. This is the Children's Hour.
Taka ke na kwa no taski
kawapatama pisempe mute takakita kwan peye se sakne kamoan.
Randall Paskeman with Beautiful Bird.
You're listening to Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Many thanks to the Outpost Performance Space for hosting the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is supported by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support for the Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. You can keep up with the Children's Hour by subscribing to our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org. Teachers, we have learning guides for many of our episodes, and they meet and cite curriculum standards around the nation. You can find them all at childrenshour.org.
This is Bird Note. Ornithologist Bill Evans has helped us better understand the sounds that birds make as they migrate at night. Known as nocturnal flight calls, many species can be identified based on their signature sound, like this green heron. Using special handmade microphones left outside overnight, Evans, his colleagues, and many volunteers recorded countless nocturnal flight calls to catalog and identify the sounds. But we're still working to understand these calls. Some are very similar to each other. Others have never been identified. Some of the many modern-day mysteries that biologists face. But for now, take a moment to revel in the beauty of the calls that birds make at night while flying hundreds or even thousands of feet in the air. This clip is from a six-hour recording of squeaks, whistles, and peeps from thousands of birds passing over a hayfield in central New York State. You'll hear a few crickets, too. Learn more about nocturnal flight calls and how you can record them on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
But winter is on the way. It's gonna get
Mark Butterfly song is Marsha and the Positrons, right here on the Children's Hour, where we're learning about migration. And our guest is Scott Wydensahl. We only have a little bit more time with him. Let's go over to Max.
Why is migration risky?
Well, especially for a young bird, it's only a couple of months old. It's never been maybe more than a mile from its nest. Birds don't travel with mom and dad. They travel on their own. Some birds do travel in family groups, some waterfowl like ducks and geese and swans do, but most birds are traveling entirely on their own. So they have to find their way on their own, and they can run into problems. You can imagine all of the natural hazards, storms and wind and predators. Other birds like falcons and hawks are going to try to catch them. And then there are also dangers from people. A lot of birds, unfortunately, fly into windows. Windows, they don't understand glass. There's a real problem with lights at night, especially in cities, because birds are attracted kind of like moths to a flame. They're drawn into cities where they can collide with buildings. So one of the best things we can do for birds during the migration season is to turn our lights off. The other thing that is really important is if you have a cat, please keep it in the house. Cats kill millions and millions and millions of birds every year. But once they make that first migration, their chances of making later migrations for the rest of their lives are much, much better. It's just, it's a really tough learning curve for any young animal, and especially for a young migratory bird.
Does climate change impact migration?
We're just starting to figure out how climate change is affecting bird migration. You can imagine that one of the ways it changes bird migration is by changing the weather. Birds are really sophisticated meteorologists. They understand wind currents and weather systems, and they depend on them. And they need predictable winds and weather patterns so they know where and when and how to migrate. And climate change is changing that. It's making storms more ferocious. Now, depending on what time of the year it is, those stronger, more powerful storms may actually help birds. There's this beautiful bird, it's a shorebird called a whimbrel. Whimbrels actually will fly into hurricanes and tropical storms. Because if you can get through the first half of it, when you come out the other side, you've got one heck of a tailwind, and it kind of slingshots them out into the Atlantic Ocean. And the first time that scientists saw them doing this, they were like, not there, don't go into the storm. But you know, these birds have been doing this for tens of thousands of years. Birds have been migrating for hundreds of thousands of years. They know what they're doing. And if things are really bad, like when Hurricane Katrina came ashore in 2010, there's a lot of birds that migrate across the Gulf of Mexico. And they were like, we're not doing that. We're just going to sit right here. We're going to wait for the storm to go through. And then after the storm passed, they flew out across the Gulf. We could see them on radar.
A lot of these birds migrate to very similar places each time, sometimes even the same tree or nest. What happens if, due to natural causes like a fire, or man-made causes like someone building a house, what do the birds do when these places they used to go to are just completely gone?
So they do, you're right, they often come back to the same place to breed every year. They come back to the same place to winter every year because it would be a risk to go somewhere else. There's a bird called the great knot. It's a large sandpiper. And a quarter of the world's great knots used to stop off at a place on the coast of South Korea. And then South Korea destroyed this huge, huge tidal wetland. And those great knots disappeared. It is important for us to understand that every time we change habitat, we make things harder for birds. The good news is, in our backyards, we can create habitat for migratory birds. It's not hard to do. In fact, the best thing you can do if you are interested in gardening is plant native shrubs, native wildflowers, native trees, especially native shrubs that produce fruit in late summer and fall when the birds need it to fuel up for their migration. You can create islands of habitat in your backyard that can make life better for these birds rather than worse.
What roles do migratory birds play in the ecosystems they traverse?
In terms of what they eat, huge, huge impact. You know, you're talking about hundreds of millions to billions of migratory birds eating trillions of insects. And the fruit that the shrubs and trees are providing, they're not just doing that to be nice. Basically, it's a bribe to get the bird to eat their fruit and then poop out the seeds somewhere else with a little bit of fertilizer that comes along with it. And that's why a lot of fruits and berries are brightly colored. They're often red or bright blue to attract the eyes of birds. It's almost a symbiotic relationship where the plants are providing food for the birds and the birds are providing a service for the plants by spreading their seeds around. Also, a lot of migratory birds, especially when they go down to the tropics, they switch from feeding on insects and fruit, and they'll start feeding on things like nectar. And they're going from flower to flower, just like hummingbirds do, and pollinating the flowers as they do that. You know, these birds are traveling huge distances, and yet they fit right into that ecosystem because that's their home as well. There's no one place that these birds live. They're inhabitants of the whole.
You can learn a lot more about migration and our guest by going to childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. Scott Weidensahl, thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour. We learned a lot from you.
I can't tell you how much fun I had.
If you want to learn more about Scott Weidensahl and ways that you can join him on research journeys, you can go to childrenshour.org. We've put a link where you can learn a lot more. This is Birdsong and the Eco Wonders.
Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. There is a place in Baja, Mexico, where the water is warm and the gray whales go to give birth to their babies in the winter time. And to get there, they have to swim 6,000 miles. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. First, they spend summer in the cold North Sea, in Alaska, where there's lots to eat. And when the days get shorter and their bellies get full, they begin to swim fast as they can to Mexico. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. And after swimming down the coast 20 hours a day, they finally arrive at the perfect place for a baby whale to be born. In three special lagoons in Baja, Mexico, where the water is shallow and warm. And when the babies are born, they're already about 15 feet long. And those mother gray whales, oh, how they protect their babies. They keep them close to their sides at all times. They nurse the babies with their milk, and they teach them and love them. It's a beautiful sight to see. And when the babies are big enough, it's time to go back to Alaska, a long way from Mexico. So those amazing whales do it again. They turn around and swim 6,000 miles. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. These whales are so amazing. They make the longest trip of any mammal alive. Swimming and a breaching, fluking and a swimming from Alaska to Mexico and back again. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. Migration, migration, my, how far those gray whales go. My, how far those gray whales go. My, how far those gray whales go.
That's all the time we have left on the Children's Hour. Find links, pictures, and so much more info, including our playlist, at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. We're going to go out with Yaniza. We'll catch you next time for another edition of the Children's Hour.
I woke up having a good day. Sun was shining, I got good news in my mailbox. Sometimes I get kind of restless. Think of all the places where I've never been. Took a stroll down the street. Your life is your life, and if you wanna fly away, then go ahead and fly.
What more could we need?
Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit.
You can find photos, links, learn-along guides, and more about us at childrenshour.org.
Children's Hour today was produced by Sarah Gabrielli, Thania Lentz, and me, Katie Stone. We also want to thank BirdNote, as well as our guest, Scott Widensall. You can find a lot more information about this episode at childrenshour.org. Look for Migration.
Find our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to our patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the Children's Hour podcast.
Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind.